Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions ended the coaching career of Matt Eberflus, at least with the Bears, anyways. The 23-20 win on Thanksgiving Day at Ford Field. Lions dominate on in the scorebook, right? Like time of possession, rushing yardage, and overall yardage. But start out great in the first half, struggle mightily in the second half, got bailed out from some terrible decision-making by Eberflus. They have the Packers this week once again on Thursday night. Two Thursday night games in a row, I think that's the first.
Yeah, it's not the first time the league's done it, but it is the first time the Lions have had to go through it. Last year, I can't even remember who had to do it last year, but I think it's a, I don't know, I'm not a big fan of it. I think having two Thursday games in a row is, it's got to be hard, right? It's going to be hard on the players. And
hard on you.
Not certainly.
2 days in the middle of the, well, it's what matters, not the Lions.
Well, but I also think part of the injury dilemma that the Lions are in.
Oh boy, already.
No, is because you're trying to get these guys to go on a short week, and you know, you don't have the proper recovery time, and I think it lends itself to this. It lends itself to getting guys injured. And so, you know, we've seen this for years. This isn't just like this year poor Lions type of thing. This has been a problem for a while now, but you know, look, these aren't going away. They want to do Thursday games. They're now introducing Friday games, right? Mm-hmm. And they want to keep doing as many games as they can. So I get the appeal financially. I get why they want to spread it out, but man, it's tough on these players. And you can get a silly injury, and when you have three games in 12 days, you know, a simple 2 week injury that should cost you two games cost you three now. And it just, everything becomes a lot more challenging. So yeah, I'm not really digging the back-to-back Thursday games. As a fan, I'm sure it's super exciting and enjoyable. I know from some of the fans I've talked to, they're looking forward to it. But like you said, personally, I'm it's not a lot of fun to have to do these podcasts on a Tuesday when we're trying to when we're still trying to gather information. We want to deliver as detailed as possible. Luckily, it's the Packers, a team we're familiar with, so should be okay.
Yeah, Lions beat the Packers first time around 24-14 in Lambeau Field in poor weather. Luckily, they'll be safe inside the friendly confines of Ford Field. You do mention, you know, the three games in 12 days, you know, that's the type of schedule that did in the 1934 Lions, which we've been hearing so much about these last few years. Remember, you and I broke down their game by game a few weeks ago, and they lost three games in a row, just eight days.
Yeah, I think the only team they lost to was the undefeated Bears or something like that, if I'm not mistaken.
They also lost to the Pack. They lost to the Bears twice and lost to the Packers. So, interestingly enough.
It all comes full circle, huh?
Right.
Well, this is an interesting game for a couple of reasons. One, the Lions are on a historic pace here. They have right now they're tied for best record ever through the first 12 games of a season. They're tied for the most consecutive wins in a row with 10. And if you win this week, you know, you have a chance to extend both of those and become the solo team, not tied for it with the 34 team. You also have a chance to knock the Packers out of the NFC North race, because they wouldn't be able to come back and win it with you having tiebreakers over them. So it's a lot of fun things that could happen if this game, you know, Lions would have a chance to clinch a playoff berth.
Yeah, because the win, they clinch.
Every week that goes by, it just gets everything is a little easier, and so yeah, it's a tough stretch coming up, but there's some big opportunities, and so it's Thursday night at home, big divisional rival. I really think the Lions are going to be at their best, and I think it might take that to beat this Packers team because the Packers team is playing real well.
Did you see the Detroit Free Press threw information about the last 35 teams to win 10 games in a row?
No, I did not.
I don't know if I think it was 19 it's since 1978. I think since they expanded to six team playoffs in each division. I think it was 78. I can't remember what the thought process behind starting at 1978, but there's been 35 teams. Seven of them have won the Super Bowl. 13 of them, including those seven, reached the Super Bowl. So,
Wow.
not in the bag here. And the
No,
last
no.
five to do it, none of them won the Super Bowl. So it's interesting facts, interesting factoids.
Yeah, that's the that's the way the NFL is
Right.
designed
Anything
now,
can
right?
happen any week.
Yeah, they do that. It's that's the purposeful nature of that, the way they construct the salary cap, the way that they limit the rosters, they do it to create as much balance as they can so that every fan base is clinging to that hope, right? You cling to that hope that you'll have a chance, and then you get more people bought in. It's a great, business model to have 32 products and have like half of them with the people who are just clinging to hope that this could be their team.
Could be the
And so
year.
they're all invested in it. Yeah, it's great. But that being said, I think when you look at these divisions, the AFC is like it's almost like settled at this point. Like there's the difference between the top seven and everybody else is very vast. NFC is a little bit closer, but again, I think the top seven are very clearly better than the other ones, and it just becomes a matter of like who's going to win the South. You know what I mean? And stuff like that. So,
Well, there's
but go
I
ahead.
don't my one buddy was pointing this out that he took a picture of the playoff picture was on the Fox game on Sunday, the Arizona Minnesota game, and it showed, divisional leaders, wild card leaders in the hunt, that last column. And he pointed out they had to shrink down the names so they could squeeze the Dallas Cowboys at 5-5 and 7, still in the hunt of making the playoffs.
Well, I mean, look, whatever you got to do to keep that fan base, selling
Engaged.
tickets, right? You
I
gotta
think the tickets are all already sold for the Dallas Cowboy. I don't think
Well,
they're
but
in any
then,
risk of not selling out.
well,
Showing up, probably another story, but what do they care
sure.
once they've sold the tickets?
So, like in the East, it sure looks like the Eagles are going to win and the Commanders are going to
Yeah.
be a wild card. I'm just rough estimates here with a little over a month ago. The NFC West is wide open because you got the Seahawks. They've got a game lead over the Cardinals and Rams, and the Niners are behind them, but the Niners are falling apart. Lost both their backs this week. Did you hear that?
Yeah, well,
Both,
yeah, I was
yeah.
watching the game on Sunday, and yeah, they've got this fourth stringer. So hopefully the fantasy players out there, if they drafted Christian McCaffrey, they have at least three of his handcuffs, and they're in good shape for this coming Sunday.
Three North teams look like they're all going to make it. Matter of who ends up with the lead. Lions are, they have the heavy percentage favorite right now. They look like they're still in a good spot, even though they're
Good
only a game
spot. They're
ahead.
not in a good spot.
No, no,
They're
they're.
11-1. Like, this is like, it's the Lions' curse, man. They're 11-1, yet only cling to a one game lead in the division, and two games from being in third place.
No, but the Vikings and Packers also play each other, so that's going to hurt them from a competition standpoint. And so, like, the Lions are still the statistical favorite,
Well,
right?
sure. I understood.
And then the South is just, you got 6-6, 6-6, Falcons and Buccaneers battling it out, and that's a disaster of a division. Whoever ends up getting the oh geez, what will it be?
Four seed.
The four seed would be the South winner, so the
Right.
five seed would be whoever's the fifth
Minnesota
seed.
at
Yeah,
this minute.
like they would have a good, I would think they would be the favorites over this South, whatever South team comes out.
I
You
would
could even
say at this
argue,
point that the see if the Seahawks if the season ended today, the Seahawks would win the West and they would not be favored of against the Packers going to Seattle.
right, so you could be talking about the 3 and 4 seeds in the NFC not being the favorites over the wild card. It's an unusual set of circumstances with what's going on in the NFC. But yeah, look, this is the time of year when the good teams separate themselves from the bad, and the really good teams find a way to win regardless, and the teams who are good but not great find ways to lose because they get passive at the goal line instead of going for it, or they opt to kick a field goal instead of trying to push, or and then they go to prevent defense or something, right? Like the good teams go for the win, the bad teams don't, and or the great teams go for the win, the good teams don't, and the good teams are usually on the outside looking in. So it's this is where we separate everybody from each other. And Lions got 5 games left. In my opinion, the best 2 games or the hardest 2 games left on the schedule, and I'm interested to see if you differ from me here, but I think the hardest 2 games for the Lions are the next two, are the Packers and the Bills.
Yeah, I would
And the
agree.
And then after that, Chicago's not going to be a walk in a park, and at San Fran isn't either. But those could be very different teams 2 weeks, 2 and 3 weeks from now than they are today. And then the Vikings at home, I think, will be hard as well. But I don't think it'll be hard as this game in front of us from a division standpoint. So important game. I think it's Lions play well. When in prime time, they play well on Thursday, and so maybe that ends up playing an advantage to them.
All right, let's dig into this Packers game first. Let's go with our transactions placed on injured reserves since our last podcast. Is why is Khalif Raymond, linebacker Malcolm Rodriguez, and defensive lineman Mekhi Wingo. Everybody's pretty well aware of these injuries at this point.
Yeah, Khalif goes down before the game on IR, but again, we kind of knew it from when he got injured at the Colts game. Just officially, it became official after we recorded. Malcolm and Wingo are tough ones because they're both
Malcolm
season
for the year.
ending.
Yeah. So now they're,
Yeah,
well, that's right.
both.
They're both up.
Yeah, both knee injuries as well, which is unfortunate. But both are expected to be ready for next year, so that's a very po that's positive. I think with Wingo, you're only replacing, 12 to 18 snaps a game, maybe less on some weeks, but and so that's replaceable. With Malcolm, though, the role that he was put in, it was a, that's a starting role because of the other players in front of him that are injured, and so replacing him will be, I think, one of the trickiest things to do this week.
They're going to try it a couple of different ways. They've signed a bunch of guys to the 53-man roster. Linebackers David Long and Quan Alexander. Defensive lineman Jonah Williams. They took him off the Rams practice squad, right, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And defensive lineman Miles Adams.
Miles Adams comes off the Seahawks practice squad. Quan Alexander comes off Denver's practice squad. David Long, they signed before the game
Yeah,
off their
before last
own.
week. Yep.
So, in my opinion, based on kind of what we saw, and based on, like when Malcolm left, what was the fallout? What we saw was Ezekiel Turner taking the snaps at will, And then we saw a little bit more Trevor Nowoski at taking snaps at Sam. I think Nowoski taking the snaps at Sam was a direct result of the injuries to to Levi Onwuzurike and Josh Pascal. But at the same time, I think Muhammad did very well as a replacement. We'll get to him in a second. But Turner was the guy who got the majority of snaps at will. Now, David Long could definitely challenge him for that role, but in the moment last week when it was time to when they needed someone to step in, they turned to Ezekiel. Now, could that have been because he was a little bit more experienced with the scheme? Certainly. Could it have been because he just fits the role better? Certainly as well. We'll have to find out if he if Turner gets a start next week. Or on Thursday, or if maybe they turn to a little bit more experience in David Long. Not 100% sure. Gut is Turner. They did sign Quan Alexander, who has a lot of experience. He's played with Aaron Glenn before when he was on the Saints, and Glenn was coaching the Saints, so they're familiar with each other. And I think Alexander's another guy who has a chance to come in and start. Now, Quan Alexander also came from Denver, which is where Sean Payton was coaching, right? So again, some scheme familiarity. And he started two games. He got elevated off the practice squad, I think 3 games, and I think he started 2 of those games, and he did well in a couple of those games. So he'll have a chance to get up to when he gets up to speed to challenge for a potential role as well. So they have some options. Cupboard is not empty by any means, but I really think they're going to really need someone from the Turner, Long, Alexander group to step into a big vacated role from Malcolm, who was filling in for Anzalone, who is still recovering from that broken forearm.
Player signed to the practice squad, safety slash linebacker Jamal Adams and wide receiver Maurice Alexander was signed. He was cut and he was re-signed to the practice squad.
So Adams is an interesting one because, in my mind, he is going to kind of fill that role we had envisioned for Iffy. That kind of he's listed as a safe as a defensive back. He's categorized as a defensive back, but then he was taking reps, during position drills with the linebackers. So I really think he's going to be this coverage linebacker slash blitzer that they had in Jalen Reaves-Maybin. And then we were hoping to see it go to Iffy. Now I think they're going to get that in Adams potentially. It sure sounds like Adams is going to have like a specific role, and it's going to be kind of more unique and situational as opposed to just an every down or just or just third down type of thing. It's going to be more like this is what we want to accomplish, so we're going to put you on the field. And if that's the case, if he just learns a handful of different things, he may be eligible, or he may be qualified, to get up to speed, because he got up speed quick enough to even play this Thursday. So we'll see how it goes. He could get an elevation and then play. And if he does, I'm very interested to see how they utilize him, because the way that they're talking about him is not as a replacement type of player, but as a new weapon that they just want to add to their defense. Again, I think the role they envisioned for Iffy, and they're just like, hey, I think we can get it here in Jamal Adams. So Maurice Alexander, he was signed to the active roster before the game. Was a punt and kick returner. Then he got cut, and then he's now re-signed. He has a chance to be elevated for that same role again. So I'm just realizing I neglected to talk about Jonah Williams or Miles Adams. Just do this briefly. Jonah Williams is a kind of outside in, kind of like Levi, kind of like John Kaminsky, where he's a guy who's going to be kind of like a base end who can kick inside. And I think he's going to hold his ground. He can set the edge. He's a better two gapper. He started for the Rams last year, all of last year, as their five technique. And when they switched to a 4-3 this year, he just didn't get as many opportunities. In the Lions system, they use kind of that five technique, that Kaminsky role, and then sometimes that Levi has, like I said, had those capabilities as well. So there's a chance for him to come in, and he'll basically just be, they'll just going to ask him to like set the edge. And so, like, when you're utilizing a guy like Trevor Nowoski, Jonah Williams is a guy who you use in tandem with him. So Nowoski lines up on the outside of Williams. Williams essentially takes the edge of the offensive line and sets it. Nowoski then blitzes off his edge to give Nowoski either a more favorable matchup when pass rushing or an easier edge to set himself against the run. So that's kind of how I envision Jonah Williams. With Miles Adams, he's essentially Wingo. He's a guy who can give you 10 snaps or so. He can play nose tackle. He can play three. He can play five. You can move him in different spots, but he's essentially more of a Wingo replacement. And so you can kind of see these guys are very deliberately being brought in for specific roles that the Lions are losing to, players to IR. It's not like they're bringing Jonah Williams in and they're like, okay, Jonah Williams is going to compete to start. No, he's going to fill a role. Same thing with Adams. Same thing with Alexander. I think Alexander is the one that has the potential to develop into a bigger role, but that's only because he's had a starting role a couple times this year already and in a familiar scheme, so it might not take him too long. So lots of player movement. And so there's a lot going on with moving pieces, and some of these moving pieces were brought in because of not just IR player, but players that are currently injured as well.
It'll be interesting to see is how many of these guys are used on the field at the same time. All the new guys, are they going to try to limit it to maybe
Sure.
one or two on the field at the same time?
Sure.
Have nine guys that are settled in the system, or at least have a few games in the system. If you think about Za'Darius Smith, or you mentioned
Muhammad.
the linebacker Zeke Turner, or the Al-Kadeem
Yeah.
Muhammad. Yeah, that'll be interesting how that all shakes out.
Interesting thing with Muhammad is he came in as like a replacement defensive end. First Pascal went out, then Levi went out, and then Muhammad kind of came in, and then he got seven pressures and a sack in a limited portion of the game. And I thought he played extraordinarily well. I really think he's going to be the guy that they lean on to start. And him and Za'Darius seem to have a really nice combination working against the Bears. And we'll see if they can do the same thing against the Packers.
All right, rolling into the injured list. First off, left tackle Taylor Decker. The injury did not practice Monday or Tuesday, but was able to do a photo op in a lost bet to Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah, it's weird. So after what game was it? Colts game. After the
Colts game.
Colts, yeah, after the Colts game, he said he felt pretty good and was optimistic about his chances of playing against the Bears. And then he misses the Bears, and now he's missing this week. Well, he's been missing practices this week. And Dan Campbell basically is saying he's not optimistic he'll play, which means he probably won't, because when Dan starts using that phrasing, it usually means you're not going to play. And so I certainly think he's out. In my mind, I'm counting him as not being available. And it's a bit surprising considering the initial reaction of him saying he would be ready. So I think that's a big loss. It's one of the biggest, in my opinion. And you're going to have to go with Skipper at left tackle again. I don't think they're going to move Penei because from what Ben Johnson was saying, it sounds like they were expecting Decker might be able to play, so they were practicing as if he might play. And then if he doesn't, then they're just going to leave kind of things as they are and keep Skipper on the left side. So it'll be a little challenging this week because the Packers have some good pass rushers and they rotate their guys. The nice thing is Preston Smith, who was the right edge rusher on at right defensive end, they traded him not too long ago, and they've been using Ngbare as a replacement, who I think is still very good, but it's not like he's going to be going up against Gary, who will play pretty much against Penei Sewell this week. So I think it benefits them to keep Skipper on the left side and Sewell on the right.
Defensive tackle DJ Reader shoulder injury did not practice Monday or Tuesday.
This one's another one that we didn't expect. We didn't see it really coming. He didn't show any signs of being injured. I think he left the game for a play or two, but that wasn't anything unusual. He returned and played, and now he hasn't been able to practice. Campbell calls him day to day, but again, I don't know how he's going to go. And if you're missing two practices, that's not great. Could mean they turn to Pat O'Connor, who's been primarily the backup on the inside. It could mean, I don't know if they, I don't think they would turn to Broderick. It could, but like,
Haven't heard his name in a long time.
yeah, because he hasn't been getting a lot of run. So, like, I do think O'Connor would probably be the guy that they turn to, which is really not ideal. In my opinion, it's the second biggest loss due to injury. Decker being the first, Reader would be the second, because ideally you would have Levi and he's out, and then ideally you would go to Wingo, but Wingo's out, so now you're going to Pat O'Connor probably. And man, it's quite a difference from where this line was at the beginning of the season, or even just a few weeks ago for that matter.
Getting thin. Defensive lineman Josh Pascal, you just mentioned him, knee injury, did not practice Monday or Tuesday.
Again, doesn't look like they're opportunistic about him playing, which means if he sits, they would like to turn to Levi, but again, we're probably not going to see Levi, so we're probably going to see Muhammad. And then it becomes, what do you do after that? Do you elevate a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who's had some practice as in a starting role for the Lions earlier in the year? Or are you comfortable with Zadarius and Muhammad, and then you're just using Jonah Williams as the backup? It's tough because if you do elevate like Jamal Adams and you do elevate Maurice Alexander, well, you don't have any more spots to elevate another defensive end. And with the way the line is, they're pretty thin beyond having, a couple of guys that are normally in that starting rotation.
Defensive lineman Levi Onwuzurike, hamstring injury, did not practice Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, I've already mentioned him a couple of times, right? His hamstring, they kind of feel like he's in the same boat. Not expected to play. I believe Campbell said that while he didn't expect Pascal or Levi, he thought Pascal might be a little bit ahead of Levi in the recovery process. So we'll have to wait and see. I think this week, it could just be they miss this week, and then by the time the Bills come, all four of the guys that we just talked about are all back, at the same time, maybe not. So it's pretty bad from a depth standpoint. From a production standpoint, I think they can get the guys to do the things that they want. They can get the guys to hold the edge. They can find ways to scheme pressure with the blitz and their linebackers, but they're going to have to be creative in how they produce as a defensive line, because you're getting down to needing guys that have only been with the team a week to contribute.
Cornerback Carlton Davis, thumb injury, knee injury, limited Monday, full practice Tuesday.
So here's the positive. because he looks like he's coming back and should be good to go. So now your secondary is getting healthier. So you have your healthy safeties, you're going to have probably your starting corners healthy, and then your reserves healthy as well as a healthy nickel. So you're going to lean on your secondary to kind of save you in this one. And if the secondary can play well and you know the and do a bend don't break, it could be one of the big keys to the Lions being successful.
Cornerback Emmanuel Mosley, hamstring injury, full practice Monday or Tuesday. We're just going to assume he's not going to play on Thursday.
So he injured his hamstring in the warm-ups and they didn't want to risk it. And so, you know, it's possible they could have pushed him and he could have played, but they decided to back him off. And he's been getting full practices in, I think, because they backed him off. So we'll see. It's very possible he doesn't at the same time. If you're missing four guys, and then you add a, you know, you got a couple extra linemen that you're probably keeping as well. And yeah, and you know, you might not need to sit any other guys. You know, may just you may be in such a bad spot from an injury standpoint, your inactives may already be decided for you even before Thursday.
Right. They'll have exactly 46 guys or whatever. They'll only have that many available, period.
Right. It's, I mean, you're getting close to that, that's for sure.
All right, let's talk about the Bears game. Big old disaster for Chicago. Eberflus getting fired, which, who couldn't see that coming? Say he's saving the time. He still has the timeout saved for whenever he wants. Lions jump out to a 23-0 lead to start. Probably could have been more like 35-0, although that's kind of unfair. The Lions do have a game where they scored on the first seven drives, but you can't expect them to get 7 points on every drive they go out there. But 23 was plenty. And
What was it, 23 all the way? I thought it was like 17. I could be wrong because I thought they
well, it
scored
could
at
be.
the beginning of the half.
That's a good point. I shouldn't say they didn't score those on five consecutive drives. It's just that the point I
They had a
was
big
making.
lead.
Yeah, that and maybe a couple of those field goals could have been touchdowns as well, but we
Oh,
can say that
certainly.
every week.
Well, I tell you, when we one of the things we talked about with the Bears last week was the fact that they were a top five red zone defense. And we were saying, you know, they've done a nice job of holding touch or keeping touchdowns off the board and holding the field goals. We just didn't think the Lions would be impacted by it. But unfortunately, they were. You get stopped a couple of times where you have to settle for field goals. And then we see our first Jake Bates miss of the season as well, which was, you know, just adding to the
Preordained by
drama.
Jim Nance.
Yeah, what the hell, Nance, man? What are you
And
doing?
you're right, it
So,
was 16-0 at halftime. And I was shortcutting to my point, and I apologize to that.
okay. Oh, sorry. So, okay, go keep going though.
Well, no, you finished it off, and that was fine. I was just saying
Okay.
that they had the 23 points, but it could have been more, should have been more, obviously.
Yeah, I agree.
Everybody knows what they saw. It's just, I don't, it was a frustrating game, just period, for the Lions.
Yeah, you know, you score a touchdown on your first possession of the third quarter, and then that's it. You don't score again. And so that's not great, right? You don't like to see that happen. You know, you get stalled out a couple of times, you shoot yourself in the foot with bad plays or penalties or sacks, and it just they kind of all rolled together, making it life difficult for them. And then you miss a field goal, which certainly doesn't help. And you know, when you have a chance to you know, run the clock out with 4 minutes left, you run the ball twice and you get in a third and one and you think, okay, they're gonna get the first down, and then they get stuffed and they don't get it. And
Surprising,
that's
surprising to
unusual.
see.
Yeah, you just you know, like the design, I tell you, we went back and looked at that play. It was just a great play by the Bears. They had a simple like inside run, just running right between the center and the guard and the right guard, and they ran a little duo block on the defensive tackle. He did a nice job of kind of breaking through it. Frank couldn't get to the second level guy like he wanted to. They couldn't, so he couldn't get him turned, and it just they did a nice job of just closing that out, and the Lions get stuffed on a rare occasion, and it just happened at a bad spot there. And so yeah, then you have to punt because you don't want to give him you don't want to give him the ball basically in field goal range if you don't convert on fourth. I thought they might still go for it, but a little too close to your own end zone. Jack Fox kicks it all the way down to the one. So you're feeling pretty good, you know,
Right.
with about 3 minutes left.
They always get that first down. It's so rare to get a safety in that situation with the ball on the one.
Probably could have called a holding, but you know, they weren't going to do that in that spot, I guess. But you know, it was that last drive was very unusual because it's they would get some yardage, then they would take a penalty, then they would get some more yardage, and then they take a penalty, and then there'd be a penalty on the Lions, and then they get more yardage, and then they take another, and it just it they took like four penalties that like really hurt them, and tough situations, and then the end of game was so confusing to me, like because I'm not watching it with the announcer, you know, in my ear saying, what
Losing
are
their
they,
mind about
what are,
why
yeah,
don't they
what
take
are
a
they
time
doing?
out? Why aren't they taking a
Right.
time out?
So like I looked at the sack and I looked at the clock and there was 36 seconds and I knew it was running, but I wasn't really paying attention and I'm watching them get lined up and I'm like, okay, it's third down. What's the formation? What are they looking at? And the whole time I'm just like looking at the actual like play. And I'm not really paying attention to the fact that the clock is dwindling down and dwindling down. And I'm looking at the play and it was crazy because when they threw that pass and it went incomplete and then everyone started rushing the field, I was like, why are they rushing the field? And then I was like, oh my God, the time, that's how long that play took. That play took 36 seconds. You know what I mean? That was crazy. Just delay, delay, delay. Poor coaching, inability to make a decision. I
It's all
know
really
after.
weird. The coordinators have to be shouting in his ear. Doesn't
That's what I
somebody have to be in
said.
his headset? I
That's
don't
what
know.
I
Maybe
said.
so we heard that from somewhere. Maybe somebody was talking about it and I missed it, but like the
They get.
whoever's in his head, who's ever in his headset has to be shouting for him to call timeout. And I wonder,
Oh,
you know,
I 100% agree.
and Caleb Williams, although a rookie, like doesn't he get to a certain point of, you know what, I'm just going to snap the ball, and even though it's 3rd and 26, I'm going to ground it just so
He
the
know,
clock stops.
right? Like
You know,
he
like I'll
knows.
tell you, we'll have to go 4th and 26 or whatever. Like it's kind of weird all around. I mean, Eberflus,
All
he
around.
because they call he calls the timeouts. It's, you know, it's his decision, so it's totally his fault. But it's kind of really weird that like nothing was happening, you know.
Well, after the game, he essentially was saying they didn't execute, but he insisted that their concept, their proof of concept was correct, that their idea was,
Bunch of the word salad, bunch of gobbledygook. Go ahead.
well, the idea was throw over the middle with the running clock, let it run down to like a couple seconds, then use your last time out, and then kick the field goal and go to overtime. That was his plan. Again, passive plan, but
Masterful plan.
that was his plan. So Caleb checks, doesn't like his def doesn't like the defense and checks into a new play. And to his credit, it might have been a better play. But took too long to develop. It went to the outside. It took him too long to change the play. And so like Caleb was definitely at fault. He should know better. He's been in those in big situations before. He should know better. At the same time, how is the coach that's in his ear not screaming at him? Because if you look at the sideline in the replay, the players on the sideline at about 12 seconds are screaming, snap the ball, snap the ball. Like you can see him yelling and jumping up and down. And Caleb is just in his little world. But why he didn't call it, like if you call a timeout at 36 seconds, you can still run another play. Like you
Well,
could call
you
it
could run
18
several plays
seconds,
there, actually. Yeah.
right? Like, well, I mean, it was third and 26, so they would have had to convert,
Well,
but
but sure, but
yeah.
yeah, you could have easily run that play, and I, well, even taking the timeout at 36 seconds, fine. But take it at 15. Like once
At
things are
18.
screwed, yeah, or whenever. Like once things are falling apart, it's like we got to at least save some time here, and we're gonna catch. You know, we'll catch heck for it, but like, gonna do it now. Let's, you know, give us at least a chance.
If you call a timeout at 18 seconds, you have a time to one, get your best play, all set up in a huddle, get everyone on the same page. Two, you've now alerted your special teams unit for the fire drill because now you're going to throw it, complete it, and they have to be running onto the field as soon as the play's over,
Right.
right? So, like, you can set all that up with a timeout, but instead, he wants to run the play, then call his timeout because he's traditional and a moron and he gets
Well,
fired all because of it. So,
and that's the crazy thing. Like, think about it, like a tail of a few seconds to a whole career, because Caleb's improving, right? Like, if they kick that field goal, tie the game, go into overtime and win it, even if they go into overtime and lose it, he doesn't look so bad coming out of that game. It's
Yeah,
like,
probably
yeah, they
not.
got down and they fought all their way back and you ended up losing, or even better, if you ended up winning, like
Right.
they would have been hanging around. But instead, he goes out in a blaze of incompetence,
Yeah. And look,
which is the way to go out in a job, I think. If you're going to get fired, go big.
blaze of incompetence so bad they've never fired a coach mid-season before.
Yeah,
And
that's
they
a Halas family thing or
yeah,
whatever.
well, they broke their golden
Yeah,
rule.
they broke tradition.
Well, I mean, they've gone on record saying that they're too good to fire someone during the season, and then they went back on that pretty
Well,
quickly.
I mean, I do understand that, because
Oh,
like, what's going to happen to the Bears now? So, you know, Thomas Brown gets a chance to be the head coach, and he's done pretty well as the offensive coordinator. Now he gets the chance to run the whole thing, but like, now he's going to be spending less time with Caleb Williams. Like, these offensive, I mean, maybe not, maybe just hands over. Like, he won't even deal with the defense. And he's just okay. He's just
right.
going to be making all the big decisions in game, and not really much is going to change. But I don't know. Although, if the team quits, but the team didn't quit on Eberflus. He just did something real stupid. It'd be interesting if he kept the job. What happened next week, if his team quit on him, or if they were still, you know, fighting hard. That would have been interesting to find out. Kind of like the Doug Peterson thing. Everybody thought he was going to get fired. They didn't get fired, but and they haven't quite quit on him yet.
It's Brown goes from passing game coordinator to offensive coordinator to head coach all within a 2 week period.
Some impressive promotions.
It's the Bears fan base is absolutely dead set and convinced that they are going to land Ben
Ben
Johnson.
Johnson.
I think that's one of the crazier things for them to think because I don't see how, based on what Ben has shown he's interested in, it doesn't seem like it's an appealing job to him. You're inheriting a GM who could be a vulnerable GM to get fired. And if he gets fired, who knows, you could get fired. So I don't like that situation. You're inheriting a quarterback that you didn't pick, and they're going to expect you to bring the Lions offense to them in year one. And they got an ownership group that doesn't pay a lot of money into or you know turn around and invest a lot of money into the franchise. They don't hire a lot of extra people. They don't hire a lot of new people. They don't even own their own stadium, right? Like
They're
it's
working
the
on a new one.
yeah, well, they don't have
They don't even, Ben
they're
doesn't even know if Darnell Wright can pass.
excellent point. Excellent point. But It just, they're so dead set on him. Like everybody's just, every Chicago fan is seems dead set on it being Ben Johnson. And it just, it doesn't seem very appealing. I don't know. If I'm Ben Johnson, there's so many things about that franchise that are not, it's just not appealing to me. I don't know why Ben would want to go there. I think he would hold out for something better, but that's just me. But yeah, the Bears fan base is obsessed, obsessed with Ben Johnson.
Well, stranger things have happened. I do agree with you, though, that if Ben Johnson turning down the Washington job, which now looks like a pretty good job, like how quickly it did turn around, like he's really looking for a ready-made situation. He may have been wrong. Like he may have went to those Washington interviews and been like, "Ah, they're going to be garbage anyways." And turns out he was wrong. And maybe he's thinking, it's like, "Oh, maybe I made a mistake there. Maybe I should have taken that job." But at this point, he's going to take a pretty ready-made job for him. That I would assume that's would be what he wants. Team with a little bit better, like you said, a more stable situation in the front office. Probably a more developed defense. He probably wouldn't mind. Like he's got to have his quarterback in place or a quarterback that he would want, but he could probably develop an offense, but you'd probably want a defense that's further along, and he'd probably hire an experienced defensive coordinator once he becomes a head coach. But
It's very interesting because I think Ben Johnson has had a couple of situations that looked like they may have suited him but didn't the last couple off seasons. And I don't know if there's one this off season that looks like it suits him, but Aaron Glenn sure looks like he has a couple of his former teams that are going to be looking for head coaches.
yeah, back up with the Saints.
Saints and the
Player.
Jets
Yep.
played for the Jets,
Or the
right?
Cowboys. He played for
And,
the
correct. Like he
Cowboys.
could, like, so Aaron Glenn could have multiple teams looking his way, which I find very interesting. Considering Ben's the hot name, I really think Aaron Glenn is, he's going to be very highly coveted as well.
Wonder it like. And I have to be doom and gloom out of the two of us. But if things fall apart due to injuries, because they're right on the edge, and I was going to talk about this later, it doesn't matter. They're right on that edge where, like one more defensive loss, like and of the big hitters, right? Things can fall apart in a hurry for this team to where there's no coming back. Now they're not there yet, so I'm not gonna lose my mind yet. And the same and what we talk about every week, well, and if or if Goff gets hurt, like they're pretty much done. But for different reasons, like they still both might end up being the Lions coordinators next year. That's if that happens.
If the right jobs aren't there, I've seen crazier things. That's for sure.
All right. Are we done with Chicago? I don't know if there's much
No,
left to say.
I think we're good. We can move on to the Packers.
Did it well, see the thing, you're at the game. You're not like at home and you're not like reliving nightmares of Lions past. Like I kind of thought, like because and it was wrong of me to think this. It's like as like the Bears are screwing it up, they're screwing up this last 36 seconds, and they're still gonna find a way to win. This is still gonna be one of those things that they're going to do everything wrong, yet the football gods are going to shine down upon them, and he's going to fire this touchdown pass to win the game as time runs out. But luckily, that didn't happen. Now let's talk about the Green Bay Packers. Lions favored by 3.5. Game is this Thursday at 8 p.m. Right, 8 p.m. start.
8:15, I think it is,
Yeah, okay, 8:15. Yep. Yeah. At Eastern time, we're being listened to worldwide right now. So, Thursday night football crew, the normal crew, Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit, Kaylee Hartung, and that's on Amazon Prime, except if you're in the Detroit area like you and I, we can watch it on Fox, which to
Correct.
me is two. And I'm used to still saying that as a it's on Fox two, like, but
I
how
think
many
they
people have Fox two anymore? They
still go by it though, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, because over the air it is still too, but if you have name your cable or
Oh yeah, provider,
YouTube
yeah.
TV provider, I don't know if
Sure.
it really makes any sense anymore.
We've talked about this before. I like Kirk Herbstreit. I don't think Al Michaels is what he used to be.
Well, Al Michaels was fantastic, but he's in his 80s now. I guess this is just a cash grab. He probably heard, it's on Amazon Prime. He's like, oh, who watches that anyways? I'll do that job. He didn't like, and Herb Street was bad in his first couple of years because, like,
Yeah.
he was just being the college announcer, or he was just bringing up where all these guys went to college, like, because he knows all the players, but he knew
Yeah.
all of them when they played in college. He doesn't know anything about the NFL, but he's figured it out by now. He is one of the better color analysts there are.
Are you going to watch it on the regular broadcast, or are you going to
No.
watch the next gen?
Right, as you probably know, because you've probably seen it over my shoulder for weeks now, I do like watching the next gen.
Yeah, I'm very interested because I haven't watched a Lions game like that. So when I get a chance to go back and do the rewatch, I might go back and watch it in that version because I think that's pretty cool.
Why wouldn't you want to? So, oh wait, yeah, you're going to be there. Never mind. Just, when are you going to watch it next gen? It'd be kind of cool if you could do that and be there
Oh yeah, I wonder
one
if I
day.
could. I wonder if I could. I could probably pull it up on my phone,
Sure
but
could.
I'm looking at
Or
that
a
small
laptop.
screen. Yeah. Maybe, I
I'm
don't
sure you're
know.
plugged in. I don't know
Something
how
to
your
think
whole
about.
situation is there.
Something to think about. Yeah, for sure.
Right. Referee is John Hussey. He did Lions and Cowboys, so he's already prepared for a Lions blowout if necessary. His 23rd season in the NFL, averaging 10.09 penalties per game, so that's good. Well below a whopping, as you put it, 2.67 below league average.
Yeah, that's great. Hopefully he keeps the whistle in the pocket. Things tend to get chippy in the NFC North, but I he did a pretty good job keeping that whistle under control in Dallas, and so let's hope the same thing holds true here.
Yeah, the Dallas game, they were just looking to get out of there.
Yeah,
I was
certainly.
like, swallow the whistles, fellas. We got dinner reservations. All right. Packers come in at 9-3 on a 3-game winning streak. They have not lost since the loss against the Lions back in, what was that, early November, November 3rd, week nine.
Week 9, they had a bye after week 9, and then they won their next three games after that.
Beat the Packers, beat the Bears 20-19. They had the blocked field goal at the end of the
Blocked
game.
field goal. Yeah. Yep.
They walloped to the 49ers 38-10 at home, but the Niners have been, mired in their
Yeah.
injury woes.
That game at the time looked awfully impressive. A little less impressive now,
Yeah, well, there was
considering.
no Brock Purdy in that game
Yeah.
either.
Yes, certainly. And so, yeah, it's not as impressive as I think it looks on paper.
Finally defeated the Dolphins 30-17 Thanksgiving night. So they do have less recovery time than the Lions. They ended their game a few hours later. I missed a lot of that game because it is Thanksgiving and I'm fast
Yeah.
asleep as an old man. As a younger man, it would have been a different story, but now as an old man, I am sleeping. The game is on in front of me. Like, I'm
Right.
staring at the game, but my eyelids are in the way and I cannot see what's going on.
So my wife hosts Thanksgiving at the house while I'm at Ford Field. And so I think this year we had 15 people come over. My wife's cooks for all of them by herself while watching my three kids, amazingly. And then I come home from the game, and as soon as I get home, we leave and go to my stepdad's house to go see like my step brothers and sisters. And then like I'm there for a couple hours, and then I come home and I'm beat at that by that point.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. So, 'cause like I don't come home right after the game. Like, I got locker room, I got writing to do, I got podcasts to do with Jeremy
Or
after for the POD guys, and
as
it's
Laura would say, you're dilly-dallying around after the game.
yeah. She whenever she says Eric's going to work, she does air quotes around work. And
Well, you're not
so
coming home covered in coal dust, Eric. You're going to Ford Field to watch the Lions play. That's your job.
yeah. So I guess my point was, I was busy with the family and I didn't get to watch much of that game either.
Sure.
I did see nits, bits and pieces, and the bits and pieces I saw, Dolphins looked terrible. And so I
Yeah,
was
Mike
less than
McDaniel's probably in
impressed.
his last few weeks as head coach over there.
That's not good. I've heard both ways. I've heard people say there's absolutely no way he leaves, and then other people say, yeah, he could be in trouble. So very interesting to see that. Watch that Miami situation unfold.
There's an interesting one for Ben Johnson.
Yeah,
Miami,
he
Tua,
coached there.
Tyreek Hill.
He coached there. He was
The
a tight ends.
familiarity with ownership.
It was when Dan Campbell was interim, Ben
That's
Johnson
right,
was the one
yeah.
who took over the tight ends job for Dan Campbell. That very they were connected from that was that 06 or whatever it was. Jeez, way back.
Oh, wow, he was a kid
It
back in
might not have been
06.
06. It might have been 12 or something. Like I don't know why that number popped in my
Yeah,
head
well, I think
with the
Campbell was
10.
interim head coach in 11, I thought.
There you go. It was 11
All
or 12.
right.
Yeah, and it was, yeah. I don't know why I had that other number in my head.
Anyhow. Maybe 11's tour. Maybe it's 13. All right, we're gonna go with 11. We're wandering away. All right.
Right.
DVOA. DVOA.
Yes.
Lions still number one, Packers number five. So it's a clash of the Titans. Lions offensively are now number three.
Yep. Which is, they were number four
Last week.
last time. They've moved from four to three, so they've gained a spot in the positive direction. So they actually have a better overall offense according to efficiency.
That was led by passing because they were number 12. Now they're number nine. Whereas running the ball, they were number one and have sunk all the way down to number two.
Yeah. So look, it's a good offense, and they have the potential to be better.
Defensively for the Packers, they're 13th overall, which they've dropped a rung on the ladder since last week. 12th against the pass, they used to be 10th, and holding strong at number 12 against the run. Lions defense was number three. This week they find themselves at number two. Defending the pass, they're number one. Big bump over being number four last week. And against the run, number four, bumping up four spots from number eight from before the Bears game.
Oh, I should note, those are from week nine. Those are adjustments from week nine.
Oh, since the Packers, because part of
Yeah,
me was saying,
sorry.
I thought the Lions offense was higher than three last week. All right, never
Yeah,
mind.
my fault. I should have clarified that these are adjustments from the last Packers game, because I figured what we do some of today was talk about what's different, I guess. You know what I mean? Like we'll go
All right.
through like we normally do, but we should try and like look at. Because, I mean, it's only been 3, 4 weeks. Three games for them, four games for the Lions, and
Sure.
not a lot has changed. It's all just been kind of like little things here and there.
Packers offense from the last Lions game has gone from number five to number four. Nice bump up passing wise. They're second throwing the ball and holding strong at sixth running the ball. Lions have been number one overall special teams for the last several weeks, whereas the Packers have made a huge jump. They were at number 26 when they first played the Lions. Now they're up to number 15.
Yeah, so look, what we're seeing with the Packers is they're getting much better on offense. Defense has held or maybe gotten a little bit worse, whereas excuse me, whereas the Lions have gotten better in all facets. And I know that like when we look at the injuries and we say, "Man, how are they going to do it?" They've been losing pieces and getting better. It's the mentality, the scheme. Everything that they've been doing from a team standpoint has been improving. And so while it's easy to watch the Packers and say that offense is better than it was in week nine, I think the Lions overall are a better team than they were in week nine. And then you add in the fact that it's at home. And I think this game is it's a lot closer on paper than like, you know, the injuries may lead you to believe.
All right. So, like you said, we're going to do things a little bit differently than we normally do. We'll talk about things that may or may not have changed since the last time they played the Packers. I guess it's still worth noting there's no changes in the coaching staff. Still Matt LaFleur running the show. Adam Stenovich is the offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. It's Jeff Hafley, the former Boston College head coach.
Yep.
I don't know if you don't want to add anything there. Go ahead.
No, not much has changed. You know, they still run about 70% zone, 25% man. Most of that zone is a cover three. They will use some cover two man. I'm sorry, cover two zone. They will use some cover one man. Those are like their three main ones are cover one, cover three, and then cover two is in there as well. But that single high look, that was something that we talked about last time because they spend about 50% of their time with a single high safety, either in cover one man or cover three. And so that single high safety is a vulnerable spot, right? The last time that they played, I don't believe they didn't have JMO the last time, correct? Like Lions didn't, if I'm not mistaken.
I've got it right here. I think you're right, but I want to be sure. Yep.
Because
no Jameson Williams. So.
And JMO's the single high coverage breaker, right? Like his speed can be a problem for teams that run a little bit more single high. So typically when teams run zone, that's where Amon-Ra comes into play. Amon-Ra catches a bunch of zone catches usually on a regular basis, but with the amount of cover with the amount of single high that they run, I do think JMO will have an opportunity to eat in this game as well. And so if you can get your two big receivers involved, and then you surely got your connection with Sam LaPorta back last week, throwing two touchdowns to him, you can attack those seams when they're in that cover one, cover three. So opportunities to feature some of your best skill players, I think, will be at hand in this game. And so this is a defense that the Lions, you know, they did okay with. They didn't, you know, it wasn't like they were like lighting things on fire, but if, you know, again, the weather was a factor in that game. But you add JMO into the mix, and this is an offense that, you basically return the same offense, just you add JMO. You'd probably be without Decker, but add JMO from a skill player standpoint. And, hopefully Jared Goff will have the ability to spread the ball around. And I think passing could be a real advantage here because from a passing standpoint, you've seen a little bit of regression on the Packers side of the ball. So opportunity for the Lions offense here to score some points.
All right, defensively for the Packers, you mentioned Preston Smith's been traded since they played the Lions. He had three tackles against the Lions first time around when they played. So on the edge positions, you're going to see Rashawn Gary. You're going to see Lucas Van Ness. You're going to see Kingsley Anagbare. Interior-wise, you're going to see Kenny Clark. You're going to see Devontae Wyatt. Nothing new from what we saw last time.
Yeah. They rotate guys. That defensive line gets rotated both first and second string. We talked about that before. Rashawn Gary plays
half a sack first time they played.
And he only has 4.5 sacks on the season, and he leads their whole team. So they're not a heavy pressure team. They have, I think they have 139 pressures on the year. That's 23rd. They only had 8. Against the Lions last time, which is under their average. And yeah, they only have 32 sacks. Like Gary had the one, leads the team with 4.5. So Gary plays the most of all their defensive linemen, and he probably sees about 60% of the snaps. That's how much they rotate their other guys, right? Even Kenny Clark sees between 50 and 60% of snaps. Ngbare, between 40 and 60. Devontae Wyatt sees around 40. TJ Slayton will rotate with him when they want to go bigger. They'll put T.J. Slaton. He's around 40% of the snaps. Put Carl Brooks in for about 40%. Van Ness 40%. Like, they just rotate these guys quite a bit, and they do that to keep them fresh. But at the same time, we've talked about this in the past. Your reserves are not as good as your starters, and when if you're only playing your starters between 50 and 60% of the time, well, that's opportunity for the offensive line to win battles. And I think that's an advantage. I know that, they like this. I know they like to do it. And they found some success with it. At the same time, I think it's vulnerable to be taken advantage of when you rotate players that are not as good in as frequently as they do.
Linebackers, we will see a lot of Quay Walker and Isaiah McDuffie. You'll also see quite a bit of Eric Wilson. Also have Edgerrin Cooper, Tyron Hopper.
Cooper has been injured and he has not practiced this week. Good chance he doesn't play. He had kind of stepped into a starting role. It was, I think, McDuffie in week 9. Then they kind of switched to Cooper. Then Cooper got injured. And now they've kind of gone back to McDuffie, with Wilson kind of as that linebacker 3. So Wilson's not really the guy he used to be. I think McDuffie, he's fast, right? So you have to be careful of that. But he's not a traditional linebacker. I think you can run at him. And even Quay Walker, I don't think he's having as good of a year as he could. So I think the Lions can take some advantages of their linebacker crews.
Defensive secondary, the corners. We have Jaire Alexander listed as questionable. Keyshawn Nixon, Eric Stokes, Carrington Valentine, Corey Ballantyne also listed as questionable, and Robert Rochelle. That's who we're seeing as corners.
So Nixon, the last time we played, Alexander, I believe, was hurt. He's gotten limited practices in this week, so he'll probably play. Nixon was still working primarily out of the slot, and then he's now been moved inside. I remember I think he was actually moving inside right around that time too. Bullard was their slot. He's a safety, but he plays in their slot. I think, again, this is an advantage for Amon-Ra. Last time, I believe it was Bullard that had to square off with Amon-Ra. Amon-Ra had 7 catches last time.
Yeah,
So,
56 yards.
and a touchdown. And so again, I think Bullard's a good player and I like his future, but I think this is an advantage Amon-Ra for sure. Now they play a lot of zone, so Amon-Ra have to be sneaky, but he's so good at his routes that he should be just fine. It'd be interesting to see how Jaire does. They've kind of rotated guys in his stay. They used Eric Stokes sometimes Valentine. Ballantyne with a B. He hasn't practiced this week. He looks like he's going to be out as well. But if they can get Jaire back, that's an advantage for them. At the same time, even if you try and put him on JMO, I still think there's opportunities for JMO, and it really will. You get him out of the if you get him following JMO, it opens up opportunities for guys like Amon-Ra and Sam Laporta.
All right, safeties are Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney. You mentioned Javon Bullard. He's the nickel, or inside defensive back. Zane Anderson and Keaton Oladapo off the bench.
McKinney and Williams are a good combination. McKinney is tied with Kirby Joseph for the league in interceptions. Interceptions will be a massive, massive thing to pay attention to this week because they are, I think they, the that pick six to Kirby was really the deciding factor in the game last time. And when you look at how these teams have done in recent like history, recent couple of weeks, turnovers have been a big factor in who's been successful. So Lions haven't turned the ball over much recently. They also haven't forced a lot of turnovers. And so they've been in a couple of close games. And the games where they have had turnovers, it's been a little bit more wide open. And it's we've seen the same thing from the Packers. They haven't turned the ball over as well of late as they did early in the season. But Jordan Love hasn't thrown an interception in two games, which is shocking, considering he threw like 10 in a row or something like that. Or nine games in a row, 11 interceptions over 9 games, and then he didn't throw any of the last two games. And what do you know? Those are the two games they score 30 points each. So trying to find ways to force turnovers could be the most important factor in this game. Don't give the ball to them unnecessarily. Find a way to get the takeaway yourself. You win that battle, you're probably going to win this game.
All right, offensively, Jordan Love's the quarterback. You just mentioned him. 29, 23 of 39 for 273, zero touchdowns and the pick six. He's been the same. He's, dangerous to say the least. Really not much to say about him. Running back group is Josh Jacobs leading the way, 13 carries for 95 yards. So he was averaging 7 a carry against the Lions last time around. Also got Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson.
I have my Josh Jacobs. Oh, they're there. Against the Lions, he was averaging a ton in that inclement weather. When they come out of the bye, he gets a nice game against the Bears, 76 yards and a touchdown, 4.2 average. Puts up 100 against the Niners, 4.1 average. That was a really good game for him running. And then last week against Miami, only 43, and his average was 2.3. And I think overall, as you talked about with the DVOA, their efficiency in running is one of the areas that really has not improved. It's just kind of been what it was. You'll see these kind of bigger games from Josh Jacobs, but as a whole, from an efficiency standpoint, it hasn't really improved. They're still very good, and they can still find ways, but from a defensive standpoint, I think you're going to focus on trying to stop Josh Jacobs first. It tends to be the Lions' strategy every week where they want to stop the run. But with the way Josh has been playing recently and how he's kind of helped get the engine going, trying to shut him down early will be, the one of the Lions' main focuses, and I think something that could really help them have an advantage in this game if they can make the stops that they have been able to do in recent weeks against other teams' running games.
Wide receiver group, Jaden Reed, Romeo Doubs, who's questionable, Christian Watson, those are your starters. You'll see some Dontavian Wicks. They also have Bo Melton, Malik Heath, former Spartan Reed, was put up some nice stats against the Lions first time around, 5 catches, 113 yards.
And if you look at their last like two games where they've been scoring points, Reed has been one of the catalysts in that. Over the last two games, 8 catches, 73 yards in total, but 3 touchdowns. That's a very nice, reliable numbers. When you gotta have it, Reed tends to be the guy that they go to.
Tight ends. Tucker Kraft, Ben Sims, and John Fitzpatrick off the bench.
Yeah, majority of the time it's going to be Kraft, and he has been the other kind of go-to catalyst for this offense. Over the last two games for him, 8 catches, 104 yards, and a touchdown himself. Lions have done real well against the tight end this year. I believe they're number one in the league against defending the tight end. And so
Used to be
if
their
you,
biggest issue, but that was
I
under
know,
Patricia.
But if you can work on, because remember, you got a healthy secondary. So if you can work on trying to eliminate craft as much as possible, and it, you know, so if you've got your front trying to stop the run and then your secondary working on stopping craft, you're really going to start limiting where Love can go with the ball. Now, if Dobbs plays, which it looks like he might, he's got some limited practices in, that'll certainly help open things up a little bit more. But if Jalen Reed is really the only reliable option, it tends to telegraph things a little bit better for you as well. So I expect them to be focused on stopping run, stopping craft, and then stopping read. Those are your three things that you got to be keep focused on for the Lions defense in the passing game.
Tucker Kraft was held 4 catches, 34 yards against the Lions first time around. Dobbs and Christian Watson combined for 7 receptions and 65 yards. Offensive line wise, I got a bunch of questionables here left to right. Rashid Walker, questionable. Left guard Elgton Jenkins, questionable. Center Josh Myers, questionable. Right guard Sean Ryan, right tackle Zach Tom.
The interior has been a bit of a problem for them. There's the whole unit is really good at pass protection. They've struggled against the run, and then I think the interior has gotten a little bit weaker. All those questionable labels, I expect them all to play. I don't think any of those questionable labels are going to be problematics. But again, if you're looking at like how they've been performing of late, the interior has been kind of the weak spot. And so for a defense that's going to be trying to, you know, lean on Aleem McNeil, that's where you want your weak spots to be.
Well, that's it for the offense. Worth noting, Lions didn't have a sack last time around against the Packers. Hopefully that changes this Thursday. Let's take a look at kicking and punting. Brandon McManus is the kicker who replaced, was it Ben Narveson during the season? He did face the Lions first time around. He missed his only miss of the season. Against the Lions, he's 2 of 3. Punter is Daniel Whalen, and against the Lions first time around, only 2 punts for 84 yards. One was a 51 yarder, the other one was 33 yarder. Both pinned the Lions inside of the 20 yard line. That was his probably, oh, I wouldn't say his worst punting day on the year. He had a couple that were a little worse, but situationally and the weather. Not surprising. 51 yards in that weather. That's pretty good. Return man is Keyshawn Nixon. Both punts and kickoffs. There's a chance that we could see Jaden Reed returning. Well, Jaden Reed actually has more punt returns than Keyshawn Nixon on the season, but Nixon's return vast majority of kickoffs. I don't know what they did for it last time around. Nixon returned
Yeah,
two
both.
kickoffs for 53 yards. Jaden Reed, 2 punt returns for 3.5 yards. A crack. Long snappers, Matt Orzech.
Yeah, his PFF grade is terrible. I stopped looking after that, so.
Was it his snap bad for that McManus missed field goal? I can't remember.
That's a great question. I
It
don't know
might
if
have
my,
been.
I'm not sure if my check cleared, so it might have been. The only thing I forgot to mention was last time they were rotating Jordan Morgan and Sean Ryan at right guard, if you recall. Morgan's on IR now, so they're
Makes
just
it
that.
easy on the Packers. Just leave
Yeah.
Ryan out there.
Yep.
All right. That's it.
Yeah, you know, look, it's a team who the last time they played the Lions, I think you could say they un maybe underperformed because they played below their average pretty much across the board. And some of that's inclement weather, but some of that is just the Lions defense being good because they're a talented bunch. The strength of this Packers team is their pass, and I think that's right now the strength of the Lions defense is defending the pass. They're number one in DVOA, right? So you can hope your defensive line and linebackers kind of can You have them focus on stopping you to run, and hopefully they can get that done. And then the battle will be the passing attack, Packers passing against the Lions, secondary. And if they can hold them to a hand, they get some stops and hold keep the points down. Well, yeah, the Lions got an opportunity there to do what they've been doing, to get an improving offense and continue to, unleash it at a higher rate than they did the last time. And hopefully you can put up points as well. And if you do, ideally you put up a little bit more than they do, and you get another victory on the day.
Interestingly, the Lions would be better served if they were playing this game at Lambeau Field
Oh
in
yeah,
the
this
same
year.
conditions as the first time around. I don't
Yeah,
know, just
quite.
with the injuries line up for them,
Sure.
like they would rather be playing and forcing Love to be chucking the ball around in crummy weather. Like they'd be comfortable with their run defense in the bad weather, but like their pass defense gets even a little bit more of a boost if it was crummy out. And the Lions want to commit to the run, on the opposite side of the ball and, short passing game and stuff, which would be helped by the weather. Interesting note.
It's a good run defense. And so I think this game has shootout potential to it, and I say that with a little asterisk because both teams have top 10 offenses and top 10 defenses, both of them. And so it really, when you have a tight battle like that, most of the time the difference in these games, in these shootouts, is give an advantage to the Lions in coaching, you give an advantage to the Lions in home field, you give an advantage to the Lions in because it's in prime time. And then the next advantage goes to who can win the turnover battle. And so I really think turnovers are going to be massive in this game and could really be the deciding factor. Which team can be opportunistic? If you are, increase your team's chances to win. And so turnover is big key. Big key. Go ahead. Did you want to say something?
Over under for the game's 51.5, which is the highest over under of the games for this week, for week 14.
Yeah, I do. I think this game could get up in the scoring. And, even with the defenses playing well, I think both offenses are playing better. The Packers offense is playing better than it was last time. Packers defense, maybe not as much. Lions offense has been just kind of like waiting to kind of uncork itself. And we haven't seen that in the last, couple of weeks like we did against Jacksonville. But I think they're set up to have a potentially good game.
All right, who won last week?
You did. You were only 3 points off. You had
That's what I
20.
thought.
Yeah, you had Lions 26, Packers Bears 20. So you were only off by three.
Right.
Pretty good.
Got
You've
lucky again.
closed the gap to 7-5 now.
I'm roaring back. All right. Lot of pressure on the Lions over the last few weeks. Oh, the pressure and the fact that they've been driving so hard, they're winning these games, they've had a bunch of blowouts now these last two games. They've been not letting off the gas, but like things are happening that are like, with the injuries and then a little bit with the offensive inefficiency, games have been closer. I think this week it's going to come to the screeching halt. Not screeching halt, isn't they're going to lose out or nothing, but I think they lose this week. Just everything that's been going on is going to catch up to them. It's like you're going at it really hard and you just get sick at the end of it. If you're just, a regular person, this is kind of the Lions version, but I'm going to have Packers winning 28-24.
I totally get all of that. And I think a lot of people are in the same boat. A lot of people are in the, it's just one too many injuries. And the Reader injury is
Rest.
really, what's that?
And not enough rest. They would have been, I think they're better in the long run, they're probably better off getting 10 days off between Packers and Bills than getting
And
10 days
Bills,
off between
right?
now in the Packers, you know, like,
Yeah, I agree.
so maybe this works out better in the end, but it's just a lot to do in a short amount of time. Go ahead.
It certainly is. And so I get all of that. The thing with me is, and maybe this is just blind ignorance, but I look at the mentality that this team has and their ability to find ways to succeed even when an injury occurs. They find another way. They find another way. And as bad as the injuries look on paper, and as much as they're going to be, having to lean on some of these guys for key snaps, they're really only replacing two spots. And so you can work around that. You can scheme around that for a game if you need to. And it's going to hurt their defense. The defense is going to, certainly take a hit. At the same time, I think the Lions' offense is poised, and I think they are prepared for a shootout. And so I'm going to go with the inverse of you, and I'm going to go with the Lions, and I'm going to go 28-24.
No, not bad. I hope you're right.
Me too. The mentality of this team is just, I've never seen anything like it. And so I'm hoping it carries.
And if it does, it'll certainly be for the reasons you state. Like you said, it's the whole mentality of being able to overcome whatever. And it'll be a great sign if they end up with, if they end up winning this game and that. It'll probably propel him over those last few weeks. We'll see what happens. That's the fun part. This is going to actually be a fun game. Really looking forward to this game against the Packers.
Yeah, I think they could lose one of these next two and still be okay and still end up with the one seed. But I don't think losing both would be hard because these are hard. These next two games are hard. And but if you get them in the right mindset, I think this team has the ability to beat anyone regardless of injury. So fingers crossed.
All right, new reviews. First one we got from Die Hard Lion, which seems to be an update from a previous review, at least I think. The 5-star was very nice. First Lions podcast they listen to. We still continue to be Die Hard Lions, or what Die Hard Lion would consider to be the best podcast. We're appreciative of that. And then we got Wacko Senior, also believes this podcast is better than all the rest. So much appreciated.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right. Don't know if you have anything to add. You watched the Michigan game. You probably enjoyed the Michigan game very much on Saturday. Made a 7-5 season worth it.
It was our final day of our charity stream at Pride of Detroit because it was the last day of November, right? And so Jeremy was doing a 14-hour stream. And so I was joining him for different parts so he wouldn't be by himself. And I'd say for the first like three quarters of the Michigan game, I was just kind of on the stream talking Lions and doing stuff. And then the ch everybody in the chat, the conversation just kept talking about the game. And so eventually we were like, all right, hold on.
Yeah, what I would, yeah, why
What's
don't you
going
guys
on
would
here?
just like screw it, talk about the
Yeah.
Wolverine. You guys
Well,
both went there.
yes,
Yeah,
we both
so
did.
why not?
Well, what we did was we ended up putting the game on, and then when it got down to the last like couple of minutes, we just stopped talking lines and just watched the game, which was
It's a
another
14-hour live stream. You guys could talk about other things.
we did. I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna rewatch the whole game because I got on my DVR. But just another example of how much coaching matters, because the Ohio State team has plenty of talent that's going to be in the NFL very soon,
Maybe the highest priced in college football.
and My goodness. Can't get a win in there in the horseshoe. It's like you said, certainly worth some of the suffering that's had to we've had to endure through the season.
Suffering. As a Spartan fan, I'd kill for a 7-5 season right about now. But what are you going to do? And you've got to have, I mean, Michigan fans will have mixed emotions at the end of this. I would
Sure.
think Ryan Day is going to get fired after the college football playoff. If they don't win, if they win the national championship, well, then they'll keep him, you know?
Yeah.
Right? Like, because why wouldn't you? It's like, oh, well, you lost to Michigan, but we won everything. So, you know, you're going to stick around. But that's unlikely. Hey, who knows? Anything can happen. And Michigan won't be in the tournament. So, like,
Yep.
you know, and maybe they would have a chance at the very end to avenge their loss to Oregon. Like, so things could line up that way. I don't know. I don't think it would be likely for them to win it all, but I would assume they got to move on from Day. And then Day will have probably a nice career wherever he goes, because he'll probably get a fairly decent job, you know, coming out of that. Maybe, like, I don't know, who knows?
You know
Maybe
what
they keep him.
died?
I don't know. He's only 1-4 against him or whatever.
You know what died real quick though?
What's that?
The Chip Kelly to the NFL as an offensive coordinator storyline.
Yeah, that's really surprising. And and maybe because Day was kind of dictating the game plan, but you would think, like, when they struggled to run the ball, I mean, you know, this is Chip Kelly. He's not a bad offense. I mean, maybe he is
No.
at this point,
He
but
used to
things have
have some
fallen
of the most
apart.
he should have
Yeah,
he had some high flying,
innovative.
high scoring. Yeah. Yeah, he was highly coveted back in the day.
Right. And
Now,
then, yeah, I
nothing.
don't know about now. And that happens, right? You know, like the shooting star that, you know, burns out early. Like, he kind of got screwed over in the NFL, I thought, because he wasn't part of a coaching tree. You know, that he got a
Well, yeah.
little, they give him a little more crap because he wasn't a Parcells or a Belichick or a Walsh. You know, he didn't come from any of those trees. So he was this
Shanahan.
outsider. Yeah, Shanahan. He's a Joe Gibbs. He's an outsider to everything that's going on in the NFL. And like in the first few years, you know, he's running that Oregon offense and it was pretty good, but it doesn't quite work in the NFL, you know, because
Yeah.
the defenses are all that athletic and doesn't really quite translate. But yeah, you think you wouldn't be washing out as an offensive coordinator already. You think you would have been a decent one.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a scapegoat for sure.
Well, yeah, you fire him and then he can go back to New Hampshire or wherever he originally came from. Isn't that where he came from? You know, life can come full circle.
Well, I enjoyed it nonetheless. The what I
Yeah.
watched was enjoyable, and the whole sensation after the fact, like knowing that you have another year, and watching all the coping and stuff is really hilarious as well.
Then they start fighting on the field.
Yeah, I don't
Although,
know.
you know, like, it's never Michigan's fault, although they're always involved in it.
Yeah, well.
It's always the other team's fault. In the tunnel against Michigan State, in the tunnel against Penn State, now on the field against Ohio State. They're a bunch of angels.
Well, I mean, you don't need to go plant a flag. At the same time, Ohio State was in the tunnel basically and came out because they were offended by it. So whatever.
Well, they
And
could have won on the. I do understand that they could have won the 60 minutes on the field.
Yeah. But I mean this is happening more and more in college football
Oh,
nowadays
happening all over the
anyways.
place. And
Yeah.
yeah, oh, yeah, it makes it all right for Michigan to do.
No, no, no. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's a trend that's not necessarily a good trend, but it's a trend.
There was some post on social media. I probably should. I'm not gonna be able to find it if I try to look it up, but it'd probably be nice if I gave them credit. But I will say that somebody will get credit on this. That's not me. It's not my idea. It's like, shouldn't everybody be forced to play? If you win on the road in college football from here on out, just go plant your flag at midfield at the end of the game. That's just what's gonna happen. It's gonna become the tradition everywhere. For every
Yeah.
road team that wins on the road, plants the flag at midfield.
Well, I'll tell you,
So nobody has hard feelings.
Texas,
Texas did it to Ohio State.
Texas did it to
No,
Michigan.
yeah, Texas did it to Michigan. Oklahoma did it to Ohio State.
I mean, Texas did it to Michigan this year.
Yeah,
And
I got you. Yeah.
Michigan didn't, there was no ruckus there. But I don't know, maybe that's because it was different. It was a blowout, you know what I mean? Rather than
Yeah,
this
blow out, and it's
close
not
game.
really a rival. It's just
Right.
some school that's there, and they're gonna go. They could do it next year in Daryl Royal Field. Next year, yeah. It's different.
Well,
It's
I think
all
so.
they're all these games are their own organism, you know.
All right.
They take on a life of their own. They're snowflakes. They're all different from one another. Situations are all different.
It's interesting to see. It's not the same, but I feel like we've seen more physicality at the NFL level this year as well, like after the fact. Guys getting a little bit more loose with their taunting, guys getting, players getting a little bit more.
JMO.
Well, but
Yeah,
like, I mean, I mean, he got tripped, right? And then he throws the
he
ball.
shouldn't be throwing
No, I agree. I
the
agree.
balls.
But,
Especially with the way things were going in the game.
yeah, it's he's got second man always gets the flag,
Right.
so he shouldn't do that. But like the hit on Trevor Lawrence, right, when he
Right.
gets him knocked out, and
Like
then
I don't.
like I think there was a scrum, and then it
I get
died
the
down,
scrum. He's the quarterback.
and then the scrum happens, then the scrum breaks out a second time after he gets ejected, and it's like, ugh, just a lot of lot more emotional playing, I feel like, this year. Maybe I'm just seeing it more. I don't know. Maybe it's always been this way and I just haven't noticed it. I just feel like it's been at the forefront of my view this year. A lot of emotional athletes out there getting upset and getting personal fouls.
We used to see it like when long time ago, I think maybe
More
you saw it
individual
more.
stuff. More
Right.
individual though. Like you could see two individual guys. Now it's more like I'm talking like you're seeing more team
Yeah. Well,
scrums.
see, they're more team oriented than they used to be. Not a bunch of individuals anymore. Everybody's on the same page. And it could be just the point of the year. Like these long
Sure.
college football seasons just ending. And so there's a lot of motion for all those guys and their last games and things get out of hand in those games. Then
True.
NFL wise, I get maybe it's been a long year, and maybe this is the most tomfoolery part of the year, and it lightens
Well,
up as we move on from here. I don't know.
yeah, I don't know. You get the, like we said earlier, this is the point of the year when you're starting to separate good from great, and there's a lot of bad teams that are going to stay bad and maybe don't have the fight in them anymore, and maybe they won't for the rest of the month either. So we'll start looking at the vacation plans and draft pick seeds and stuff like that.
Right.
As opposed to, playing in February.
Right. That's it. Do you have anything else?
Nope, we're good to go.
Yeah, I'm good to go too.
Everyone enjoy, the Amazon Prime show. If
Right.
you want to try something new, try the next gen
Yeah,
point of
I would
view.
recommend the next gen. That's a fun way to watch. And after this Thursday, everybody can enjoy the long weekend, especially even us as Spartans and Wolverine fans. Neither of
I
us have to
know.
play on Saturday, and there's gonna be no Lions Sunday. You can enjoy if you want to watch football, you can just take in all the other games, probably a lot less stress of
Yeah.
whether, like you're not worried about your team winning or losing, although I'll be getting upset as the
The
Vikings make some comeback, and the Eagles are dominating, being like, come on, they can't make it, they can't create any space.
Right, I know. Well, you got your opportunity to create your own space right here.
That's
So
true.
hopefully they can do it.
Yep, that's it. All right, that's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.